achieving that, being successful, doesn't necessarily mean that we've hit the jackpot. It means that we're just successful. We can be successful at failure as well. But happiness wanting what you get, I think that's the key thing that we need to really dial in on.
Welcome to the Alchemist Lounge. What if you could hang out with high-performing executives, entrepreneurs, and leaders? Ask them about how psychedelics have impacted their self-improvement journeys. Then take an insight or two to guide your own growth. Each week, Alex Atwood takes an in-depth look at how psychedelics can increase fulfillment, solve personal problems affecting your career, and help you gain the success you seek. Alex is an executive and psychedelics coach to high performers, and his goal is to provide strategies to help you reduce conflict, bring awareness, and balance your life through the use of psychedelics. Now, here's Alex.
Daniel, welcome to the Alchemist Lounge.
Alex, you couldn't have had a finer name for a podcast in my esteemed opinion.
Thank you. I'm surprised no one else took it, but I grabbed it and I think it's perfect. And it's a perfect container to have you on the show.
Happy to be here.
Yeah. So when I was doing a little bit of research, I looked and I noticed that a headline on your website is how to manifest wealth. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious. So how does our relationship with money impact our ability to manifest abundance in other areas of our life, like health and relationships and things like that?
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I come to see in my own experience and the experience of the countless people I've had the opportunity to connect with and work with and mastermind and learn from over the years is it's illusionary that there's separation between the separate parts of our lives. There's always some kind of crossover. Now, that crossover appears to be more apparent sometimes and less apparent at other times. Nonetheless, it still exists. One of the things I found in my own experience was really funny was looking back at my dating experience. I separated from my son's mother, my wife, last year. A very amicable, with really good friends, nothing angry about it. But it was really hilarious looking at the behavioral patterns that I ended up with in that relationship. And how that was shown up in some of my friendships and also some of my business relationships. And then I looked even at the pattern of the dynamic and how that actually showed up in some of my familial relationships and countless of my other romantic relationships. Wherever you go, there you are. When we look at the different areas of our life, health, wealth, again, wherever you go, there you are. Still the same you that's manifesting the outcomes in those different situations. They may have different contexts. They may have different experiences that we have in a more of a micro context, but at a macro level, it's still us. And so if we have shortfalls, shall we say, or challenges in how we're manifesting healthy bodies, there's going to be some clues there as to what's showing up as to why we're not so much got so much healthy relationships, a healthy bank account. If we're having challenges with our finances, there is going to be some clues there as to what's showing up as challenges or potentials for challenges in other areas of our life too.
So Daniel, the words written before your name on most of the articles that I've read title you as the master of success.
Yeah.
So given that particular context you gave in terms of money's relationship to everything else in your life in terms of the ability to manifest abundance and health and relationships, in that context, how do you describe success?
Okay. So I actually got one of my mentors, a guy called Nick Nanton, put me forward for this awardee thing that happened in the Wall Street Journal about 3 years ago. And it was like the Masters of Success series. And we submitted our profiles and they did some research. And that's where I got it from. So I keep the clipping actually here in the office. So that's where that one came from. So for all the people that are, Master of Success, it generally was a title that someone saw fit to give me. But for me, anyway, success is getting what you want. Happiness on this, on the other side of what you get, but success is getting what you want. So it's going for a goal. It's going for an intention. It's going for an end result and actually getting there. That's what I consider success to be.
Very interesting. So I've seen in the journey towards what you just described as success is arriving and then being in a place where something is missing. So how would you address that? In other words, a lot of what we discuss is how the journey itself contains so much. So How does the arrival towards success look in the context that you just put out there?
So for me, Alex, success is getting what we want. But to your point, yes, there are some people who get what they want, but aren't actually fulfilled. They feel emptiness. They don't feel any sense of achievement at that point. Because this is where the second half of what I said comes in. Happiness is wanting what you get. The two things aren't always connected. We can go and shoot for something that isn't really all that good for us. We can go and shoot for something that's not all that good for others. achieving that, being successful, doesn't necessarily mean that we've hit the jackpot. It means that we're just successful. We can be successful at failure as well. But happiness wanting what you get, I think that's the key thing that we need to really dial in on.
Yeah, absolutely. So curious. You have this very palatable, positive mindset. And what I've learned is that the journey usually determines and shapes the mindset. So I'd love to hear about your childhood. What are some pivotal events that you remember in your childhood that shaped what you are today?
I would say that in terms of who I am today, the key points didn't necessarily happen in childhood, right? Because I actually had to take some steps back and have to do some pivots later on in life. And those are actually maybe who I am today. My childhood actually made me who I was that needed to pivot into who I am today, if that makes sense. I like to think of my life as currently sort of a trilogy. Part one is leading up to about 19 when I made my first million. Part two is moving from losing that first million into getting to the point where I actually had given up all hope on life, to the point that I'd actually had very deep and dedicated suicidal ideation. And then coming out on the other side of that and rebuilding my life and finding out who I really was here to be is part three. And that's where I am right now in my life. So I had a lot of success quite early on in life. Like I said, I made my first million when I was 19 years old. I taught myself to make computers when I was 13. I was on the entrepreneurial track very early. But this is, to your point, one of the things about getting what you want isn't always a great thing. I had so much success and no trial and tribulation, no testing, that I had the arrogance of youth compounded 1,000 times because I had so much evidence of my infallibility to back it up. And so I had to go through that dark period in order to understand that, no, I don't know everything. There's more to life than what I thought there was. And the ability to understand how to get help from others, how to partner with people, how to be of contribution, all of that came from losing everything and going through the antithesis of success that happened over a period of time for me.
Did you believe in magic as a child? Did you believe in alchemy when you were coming up?
Yeah. In fact, this is why I'm laughing, because a part of my work is something we call alchemic life creation. And I'm actually doing the final event. We've done about four or five of them, a live event that I do for 3 days here in Mexico called the Alchemy of Abundance. I'm actually doing the last one of those this weekend. So I'm all about the alchemy. But for me, magic isn't something mythical and mysterious. It's something real and tangible that we all have access to if we allow ourselves access to it.
Just being aware that it's there allows it to support. Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. So you discovered your purpose, what I'm hearing, and you discovered your next path during a time of financial, what sounds like crisis. So walk me through that. Walk me through where that alchemy and that purpose showed up in that, what was potentially at the time a desolate place, if you actually considered suicide.
So for me, the dissolution wasn't even the financial, because the thing is that I never really doubted my capacity to get back on the financial track, because I didn't really have any failures per se up until that time. I had this sort of upward track down to the teachers at school. Oh, you're going to be a millionaire one day. I had no doubt in my mind that I was going to be a millionaire. None at all. It was just something I knew was going to happen. And it was a path that just kind of plodded into place. Like everything sort of just slipped into place. I had a Midas touch, you could say, up until the time that I didn't. So even when I lost everything the first time, I really didn't have any doubt at all in my mind that it would come back. It was a bump in the road. Never mind, I'll go and do it again. And within like a year and a half, I was a millionaire again. But it was when I lost everything the second time that it was like, oh, maybe I don't know everything. And it was really to do with the way that it was lost as well the second time. And so the financial piece was the measurable piece of it. But the real piece that really put me into the dark space was having my very sure worldview, which included me knowing everything, smashed into the realization that I don't, in a very brutal snapshot way. That's what it really was for me.
Mm-hmm. What a gift to be able to be in that space and be able to find opportunity there. Wow. When I look through the books that you've published, what I notice is that the power of the mind seems to be a theme, like a thread, and the role that it plays in creating abundance and success. So I'd like for you to tell me a little bit more about that. What do you mean by when you think mindset and the power of the mind? How does that play a role in abundance and success?
Okay. So first and foremost, I want us to sort of touch on a teaching that I've got, a concept that I call the flow funnel. And the flow funnel invites us to consider the different layers that make up reality as a whole. Okay. So we've got the tangible physical layer that we call our three-dimensional physical reality we experience with our five senses. We taste, touch, feel, smell, all of the things, right? But then we know that there's such a thing as mind over matter. So there's another layer which has some level of directive force on what can happen in our physical world. Mums who've never lifted a weight in their life can rip a door open because there's something that goes on in the mind that triggers. When we go into The Biology of Belief, which is a book by Dr. Bruce Lipton, he even tells us that only 2% of diseases that we experience are actually manifested purely from the genetics. The rest of it is beliefs triggering a response in the physiology that leads to an outcome. All right. So we've got mind over matter. But then we've also got the fact that the law even recognizes crimes of passion, that when we're in particular emotional states, our capacity to think becomes shifted or limited. We can only think to the level of our current emotional state. So we've got feelings, thoughts, emotions, right? We've got, sorry, feelings and emotions impacting thoughts and mind that impacts physical reality. So ultimately, everything that's happening here in our physical reality has at some point passed through, we could call it the realm of thought, the realm of mind, in order to become a part of what we actually experience. When we dip over and start to look at the physiology of the brain, which is our organ that connects with mind and starts the and has the organizing function of what happens in the body, we see that there's a part of the brain called the reticular activating system, which, if given particular instruction, which often happens at the unconscious level, will not be able to physically witness things happening in our world. So one of the tricks that they sometimes play in some of these personal development workshops is say, close your eyes, think of the color red, open your eyes, and you start to see red because you've triggered the reticular activating system to focus in on red. But when there's something that's outside of the realm of belief, the mind literally can't see it. So I can have the opportunity to have the love of my life. I can be praying for them. I can be vision boarding about them. I can be doing magic spells. But if in my mind, if my unconscious mind doesn't hold the belief system that it's possible for me to have a healthy, loving relationship, that perfect partner I'm going to see is just a friend. I'm going to have excuses. I'm going to self-sabotage. I'm just going to walk past them, right? We've all seen it on the movies where the best friend is like the perfect one for them, but they can't see it. I can have done all of the writing out, I'm wealthy, I'm wealthy, I'm wealthy every single day. I could have watched those YouTube videos every single morning. But if I've got a limiting belief that says that I'm not allowed to be wealthy or holds a negative charge around wealth, such as money's the root of all evil, all rich people are bad, whatever, I'm not going to be able to connect that physically in the brain and see it in my world. So the mind for me is the gatekeeper to experience. It allows us to filter out what we experience to the positive and to the negative and limits what we can actually experience in our physical reality.
Mm. So it begins at the point of feeling. Is that right?
It begins at the point of direction and then moves into feeling, right? Mm. So for most of us, we're run, I think the numbers are 70% of our daily actions are running on the unconscious level, as much as 94%, I think, of our daily actions are unconscious, as much as 70% of that was programmed during childhood. So a big chunk of what we're doing every day is unconscious, and that leads to the daily things that we do every day. That then triggers an emotional state, which triggers a pattern of thought, which triggers habits, actions, behaviors, which leads to results. So for me, intentionality or goal setting or being a part of the process is starting to disrupt whatever program we're running on, to have a deliberate movement into a state of emotion, an emotional state that leads into a pattern of thought, that leads into habits, action, behaviors, that leads to an outcome. But ultimately, you can always backtrack through action to thought, to feeling, and to either a program or a goal or intention.
Yeah, what this pattern is very similar to be, do, have, which yeah. is starting with the being, which then mm-hmm. leads to the doing, which then doing. Leads to the having, to the right? Where mm-hmm. on the other end of it, and a lot of the way sort of societal conditioning has had it that it's in a different way, right? You do, and then you have, and then you be. Then so you be. I do something like get whatever degree certification, and then I have this wonderful materialistic object, and then I'll be happy. And that's sort of the societal commercial way of going about that. We talked a little bit about limiting beliefs and negative self-talk. So what would you say is behind the primary limiting beliefs and negative self-talk that we have?
It's just programming at the end of the day. And I think it's really important to mention here, Alex, that many people go at war with the mind, right? I'm going to beat my limiting beliefs. I'm going to, but the mind's not your enemy. It's your friend. It's just going on the basis of what it's been given, right? It's a very loyal soldier that executes on whatever instructions it's been given. The unconscious mind doesn't have an opinion. it doesn't want you to be negative. It doesn't want you to be lonely. It doesn't want you to be broke. It just goes on whatever evidence environmentally it's been exposed to. Now, the challenging thing is, for many of us, we're locked in the limiting belief that the program that we've been given is what we're stuck with. And as the numbers, and I'm really sure these numbers are correct, but, you know, I'm sure one of the listeners will correct me on this, as much as 70% of those programs that we're running on happened between about the ages of 2 and 7, when we didn't have an analytical function and we were just a sponge in theta, soaking up everything from our environment. It's really weird. So my son's just turned 2 in December and my stepdaughter just turned 7. And it's really wild watching her go through that sponge stage. And now she's got this new level of analysis, this new level of challenging, this new level of questioning, and this new level of mental independence that she's exercising. And then I'm watching Ethan just learning to do things. And just, it's like, where did he learn to do that? He's just sucking it out from the environment. So during that critical time, the foundations for who we are were built. The lie is that we have to stay that way. There are processes that we can go through. There is work that we can do. There's a game that we can play to reset those programs. But the difficulty is, as straightforward as the instructions might be, it's not easy, because we're talking about dying to self. We're talking about letting go of blame. We're talking about letting go of our addictions mentally and emotionally. We're talking about taking responsibility. We're talking about no longer being able to say it's the government's fault. We're no longer to be able to say it's our mum's fault. It's society's fault. We have to take that agency. And that's something that we're not often prepared to do.
That's very powerful. That's very, very powerful. I want to move over to a topic which fascinated me when I was looking at a book that you'd written called The Power of Uncertainty. And my question is, can you explain the concept of embracing uncertainty as an entrepreneur, right? Mm-hmm. Or as someone who is in sort of operating in a state of uncertainty, which many, many people are, whether they're coming out of this very unusual time in our, you know, world, or whether they're starting businesses. So I'd like to hear you tell me a little bit about how is it that embracing uncertainty can lead to transformation.
Okay, I think that was actually a workshop I did a few years ago.
Oh, okay. We'll edit that.
In the face of uncertainty. Yeah. No. Leave it as is. But it's manifesting in the face of uncertainty. And the key thing that I actually wanted people to accept and understand that day through inviting them to the breadcrumbs of it is uncertainty is, it's an axiom. It's a self-evident truth. We actually are never certain of anything. We have the illusion of certainty, and the illusion of certainty actually has us locked in patterns that mean that we can't break free of them, and then we can't actually move into effectiveness. Because you don't need to be certain to be effective. You just need to not be under the illusion of certainty to the negative. What do I mean by that? I don't have to be certain that I can be successful to be successful. I just need to be open to the possibility of my being successful. I need to be free of the certainty that I can't be successful. Because the certainty that I can't be successful holds me locked in a lack of success. Whereas openness to the possibility means I can see the potentials. I can see things moving. I can see the breadcrumbs. I can catch the synchronicities and ride those waves and continue to build on them. So it's not about trying to find certainty. It's about releasing certainty and opening up the possibility.
Ah, that's beautiful. And it comes back to what I'm hearing is just being aware and being in a state of fear doesn't allow for the same sort of awareness that leads to creativity.
And
that's exactly right. I have a question. We're talking a lot about the mind, but I'm curious, what do you see the heart? How does the heart play a role in success?
So we've spoken top line. Let's drop a little bit into bottom line. The bottom line is that mind is split between what's happening in the brain and what's happening in the heart. In fact, the magnetic field of the heart, I think, is 10 times bigger and stronger than what's going on in the mind. And so heart intelligence, I think it's Heart Math Institute have done so much research into this. Heart intelligence is infinitely more powerful than brain mental intelligence. And so when we're looking at that top down thing of feeling, thinking and doing, when we look at that magnetic field being stronger in the heart, it's no wonder that the mind is slave to the heart and the feeling, because it's a stronger field. And that stronger field sets the container for what's going on mentally. And so what we're feeling in the heart is setting the landscape for what we can experience in the mind. And when they come into harmony, magic can happen. That's when you'll see true alchemy.
Wow. What a beautiful way to end this conversation. You've said quite a bit. And, you know, of all the guests that I've had on the show, you articulate things so well. And you have such agency about how you articulate things. So thank you for providing such pragmatic and practical tips. I'm so curious to learn how you earned your millions in your years and the details there. So we'll have to get dig into that more. But before we close, what's something that you can leave our audience with? If there's one thing you'd like to distill your work down to, like we can call it an essence, what would be mm-hmm. the essence of your work or the distillation that you want to pass down to somebody who's listening to this?
There was a distillation that really linked into what we spoke about today. It's simply this: reality wraps around how you feel. Reality wraps around how you feel. How you feel is going to set the landscape for what you can think, and what you can think is going to set the landscape for what you do. And how you feel is always going to be the byproduct of the environment around you. So take a look at your environment and ask yourself, are the people, places, and things I spend the most time with curating an emotional environment for me that leads to a physical environment that I want to experience? And if not, what can I do about changing that today?
Wow. So practical. Coming from the master of success, not self-described, but described through the Wall Street Journal. I want to make that a point. Thank you so much, Daniel Mangina. This is a pleasure speaking to you. For those that are interested in learning more, you know, learning more about you, possibly contacting you to reach out, how do they reach you?
The best way to do that is to head over to dreamwithdan.com. Dreamwithdan.com. Everything's there.
Got it. Dreamwithdan.com. Continue to dream. Thank you so much for joining the show. A true alchemist, giving some tools on how to activate alchemy in your life. Thanks for coming on The Lounge.
Thanks for listening in to The Alchemist Lounge. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review on Apple iTunes. To catch all the latest from Alex Atwood, you can check out his website at alexatwood.co. Thanks again, and we'll catch you next time at The Alchemist Lounge.